Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, how now, Valcar? 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing. Hey, hey, boss. You know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. You'll turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
Jim Toronto here with you, filling in for Dave Flyer this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. Hope you will stay with us. I'm going to be here until 5, so I hope you can stick around as well. And very happy to be working again with my good friend Roger Badish. How you doing, Roger?
I'm doing great, young man. How you been?
Hey, young man. How are you?
Hey! You young whippersnapper.
So, I saw Roger before the show. It's always nice to see Roger. I haven't done this shift in a while when we would be on at the same time. And, wow, Roger, you are you're way into this North Korea story, huh?
Well, you know, a lot of people think that nothing happens news-wise overnight. But it's only overnight here.
What time is it in North Korea? Do we know?
It was at 2:30. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
It's
I think about 4 o'clock in the afternoon now.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you know,
things happen in the rest of the world.
You know, a little afternoon delight.
Not for me.
Yeah, poor Roger. Now, Roger, my goal today.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many people. I mean, this is always an interesting shift because I don't know how many people are listening. I do know it's a very loyal audience because people either are listening because they might have insomnia, they may the baby, their newborn, may be waking them up, they may be going to work or coming back from work. So I don't know how big the audience is at this time, but it's always my goal to inform and entertain.
There you go.
But tonight, I am extra psyched up to do that because, Roger, I really believe that you need some entertainment. You need to laugh.
Yeah.
I walked into the newsroom today.
I was serious.
And Roger had this look on his face. Said, "Hey, Roger, how's it going?" He's like, "They're gonna blow up the world."
Yeah.
I'm like, "Whoa!" But I've got a show.
let me call North Korea.
I mean, yeah,
let
call Young Jung Mung, whatever his name is, and let him know that Elton Jim's going to be on until, you know, I don't know what his plans are, but tell him to wait until 5 a.m. Chicago time.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Then, you know, but I've got, you know, I work, my producer tonight is Joe Romano.
Yeah.
So we've got a nice, you know, Italian show to go here. My paisan, if you will.
My guy. How you
Romano
doing?
And Toronto.
There
yo.
You go.
Hey.
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 You got some cheese and some bread.
You guys better be listening to the show or else. What can I say?
Yeah.
I hope
you
don't.
I was watching at home earlier. I was watching Jersey Boys. So
nice.
Know,
hey, I interviewed Frankie Valli about 2 months ago.
Yeah?
I wrote he's going to be at Ravinia next, what is it? I think on Saturday. Well, Friday. He's going to be at Ravinia on Friday, and I wrote a story about him for the Ravinia magazine.
Nice.
So I interviewed Frankie Valli. Real nice guy.
Did that, yeah.
And once again, a nice paisan.
Yeah.
And Roger, let me just say this.
Uh-huh.
I did a DNA test several months ago, And while it came out what I expected, I was always raised to told that my father was all Italian, my mom was all Polish, right?
Oh, okay.
So I was supposedly a 50-50. My dad's name, obviously, Toronto, Italian. My mom's maiden name, Kielbasa. Oh, Lori Sausage, as my dad used to call her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. So that's why this is a big weekend for me, because it's Taste of Polonia.
Yeah.
And so so I expected that, but when I did the test back, Roger, you are of the Jewish persuasion.
Yes, I am.
Can I just say, Bubala.
Bubala.
Nachis. You're my mensch. You and me.
I've been called that many a time.
What, that you and...
I'm a mensch.
That you and I... cannot be.
There's what a percentage?
I don't want to say anything.
It's
but all I can say is I thought I was a Gentile.
Yeah.
Now I find out I'm Jewish.
I'd like to think
3%.
3%.
3%.
That's all you need.
It may not be enough. It might not be a lot. But all I know is I got a Seder planned. I got a Sukkah hut planned.
There you go.
I'm jumping in. I'm jumping
awesome.
In. I've always been very interested and. And excited about the whole Jewish religion. I have a book called The Joys of Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that book for 20 years, as I said.
It's an old book.
You want some? I could throw you a Nachas. I could throw you a Mishigas.
Okay.
I could throw you a Bupkis.
Yeah.
I could throw...
Hey, use the Mishigas in the correct way. There's a lot of Mishigas going up in North Korea.
See, once there again, here's Roger. We're having fun, and you turn. Right back to North Korea. It's my job today. If I do anything in the next 2 hours and 45 minutes is to get Roger to believe that, as the Broadway song goes, Roger, the sun will come out tomorrow. I'm going to go out on a limb and say,
okay.
Roger, if you have lunch plans today, reservations at a restaurant, plan on going.
Okay.
Okay?
I'll do that.
They're not going to be canceled.
I'll do that. Thank you.
And go to an Italian joint.
Yeah. And if you want to go to...
I've got my favorite Italian.
Where's your favorite Italian?
Giovanetto.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Go see my friend Tony over there.
Bottle of red.
Oh.
Bottle of white.
Yeah.
Whatever kind of mood you're in tonight. I'll meet you anytime you want, Roger.
Okay.
In my Italian... In our Italian restaurant. Ba-da-da-da.
Thank you, Billy.
Apparently he was just at Fenway Park. But I am here till 5 a.m., and we're going to have some fun talking about a bunch of things. I want to talk about – it's funny that on the day that Roger is so depressed about the end of the world, my first segment is about cemeteries. We're tracking, Roger.
Wow.
We're tracking.
Oh, my
I want to
goodness.
Talk about one of the coolest places in Chicago is Graceland Cemetery. You ever been there?
Yeah.
It's actually one of my favorite tourist attractions, and I will tell you why.
Okay.
Graceland Cemetery, right in the shadows of Wrigley Field on Irving and Clark. So I'm going to talk a little about that. We're going to have a segment I call the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. We'll talk about a few things. One of our fellow Jewish friends, you and me, Roger, since I am 3% Jewish, I just found out. Want to give a little tribute to our friend Jerry Lewis.
There you go.
Who passed away. This is Labor Day weekend. This is the first time now we really have Labor Day without Jerry.
Yeah.
It's been a few years. He hasn't been on the MDA telethon because there isn't one anymore.
Right.
But now we really don't have Jerry. So we'll talk a little about Jerry. And the one thing I'm looking forward to here. A lot of people over the last week, there's been a lot of buzz in the last month, and the tickets went on sale this week for Bruce Springsteen on Broadway.
Okay.
And there's been a lot of talk about, what's this show going to be like? Well, I've got some inside scoop as to what Bruce Springsteen on Broadway might be like, and it's not what you're hearing. So
see, now,
stay tuned for that, because we're going to have fun with that.
Yeah, I got a question about that. So
what's that?
That's strange that I've never heard of a musical artist performing.
No, well, on Broadway,
this is
going to be a one-man
concert.
Yeah, well, it's not a concert; it's a one-man show. He's probably going to be, from what I understand, what they're saying. Like I said, I have the inside scoop.
You got the inside.
The tickets went on sale; they sold out in 45 seconds.
Mike,
and now they extended the show through February, and so I'm hoping to get some tickets. But there's only 900 seats a night.
Well, yeah, the theaters in New York are not that
so
big.
This
not
is
stadium stuff.
Some of the tickets on StubHub were going for $7,500 a piece.
Oh, my goodness gracious. How many did you got?
Yeah, I wish. So that and a whole lot more. So I'm here till 5, as I said. I got nothing else to do. I hope you don't either. So stay, keep your dial tuned here to WGN. We will have constant Korea updates with Roger Badish.
That's true.
Who is not... Roger, I picture you.
Yeah.
You remember the scene from Dr. Strangelove?
Which part?
When Slim Pickens is on the nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
That's how I picture you right now.
Yahoo!
Yep. That's you.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I don't want the.
I know, but we need to just brighten you up.
I'm in like prime newsman.
I understand that, and I appreciate this is your job. This is big news.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I just want you to. I don't want you to get so depressed that it overcomes.
Well, I'm not going to get depressed.
Okay. When I saw you there, I wanted to give you some Xanax.
Wow.
Before the show, I was like, I need to get Roger some Xanax because I never saw somebody. I thought it was weird because I saw Roger in the corner of the newsroom and he was already building a shelter in the corner of the newsroom. He was taking all the UPI news off the wire and he was taping it to the walls and then hiding in it. I felt like saying, Roger, if there's a bomb, that paper is not going to. Doesn't matter.
Oh, it's pretty thick.
This guy's crazy.
Oh, man.
So that and a whole bunch more. So, Roger, Roger will keep you up to date as long as, but like I said, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say the sun will come out.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
Yes, it will.
But for right now, we're here until 5 a.m. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dave Plyer. We'll take a quick break. So stay tuned. Hey, no switching. Bet your bottom dollar, Roger.
I'll find my bottom dollar.
What's so funny about this is I'm like the most pessimistic person on earth. And listen to me playing tomorrow.
You're trying to get me.
Yeah, I got to get you. I got to get our Roger here. I mean, like I said, Roger Xanax is I'm going to call you today instead of Badish. So Roger Xanax, do the news. Hey, Roger, I walk in. I'm all excited. I saw Roger post it on my Facebook page earlier today. Hey, I'm going to be on tonight. Hey, Roger, I can't wait to work for you. I bound in.
Yes, you did bound.
I bounded in. I love to bound in whenever I enter.
Like Tigger.
Yes, that's right. I'm bouncing on my tail. So I bound in at about 12:45.
Yeah.
And I see Roger. I'm like, hey, Roger, my man.
Yeah.
And he goes, we're all going to die. This guy's going to blow up the world. I'm like, oh, my God. What am I going to do now? So, Roger.
Yeah.
There will be a tomorrow, Roger.
Yes, I know.
All right. Heaven's front. It's really good to see and to work with you again, Roger.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. In fact, you and I... it's been quite a while.
Yeah.
And you and I used to fill in when I was on here in the afternoon, where I first got to know you. And then the first time I ever did a fill-in about 2 years ago was in this time slot. And I was so happy because I was like, okay, starting something new here. And there was Roger and someone I knew. And I was really happy to say, okay, I'm going to be able to have fun with Roger. And so you really made it... very easy and fun for me, so I always love to work with you.
I appreciate it. Love working with you, and we always have a good time.
We always do. Yeah. So we will continue to do that today, Roger, so please, just realize, I understand.
I've got my little sun lamp over here.
Yeah. Be careful. That
growing a little sun.
It's not a sun lamp. It's a nuclear bomb, and you're going to fry. You thought it was a sun lamp, Roger. I hate to tell you, but there's a big mushroom.
Let me check where it was made.
I'm looking right now at the new building where WGN's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
And I see a mushroom cloud over.
Don't
I don't want to say anything.
Just stop. Now I got... Oh, my gosh.
Gee, now he's depressed again.
I'm depressed again.
Look at Roger. I'm looking in there. Suddenly, oh, my God, look at... He's... we have a little monitor here in the studio where Roger's not in the same room with me. But I can look in a monitor, and I can see
you're
Roger.
You're closer to the bomb shelter in the basement than I am. Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, I used to be able to see Roger. He's taken every Sunday newspaper that was delivered about 2 minutes ago, and he stacked them around his cubicle, so now I can't even see him. He's in a bunker. Wow. Roger Bunker.
Roger Bunker. Bunkers are us.
Bunkers are us. So what I wanted to say, like I said, after I'm sure is going to be a very uplifting newscast from Roger Bannister.
Yeah, you go right ahead and assume that. I'm telling you.
After a nice smiley newscast by Roger, which I can only imagine. I can't wait.
I'm going to show my pearly whites.
Oh, all right. This is everybody. If everybody has some Xanax out there, I tell you, take it now. So when Roger gets on at 3 minutes, it'll start kicking in when you listen to Roger's newscast. But what I wanted to talk about today on the show, as I said, I saw in the paper that Ernie Banks, you know, who passed away recently, he just had he's been buried at Grayson Cemetery in Chicago, which is in the shadows of Wrigley Field, right on Irving and Clark. And but I guess they just dedicated a new memorial to him. So they had a little ceremony there, and it reminded me of what a cool place Graceland Cemetery is. And people say, Jim, how morbid. You're talking about Roger being, you know, morbid about nuclear. And you want us to, you're talking about how cool cemeteries are? I'll have to tell you. I think cemeteries are one of the neatest places to visit. When I travel, if I go, not only in the United States, but when I've traveled abroad, I always try to go to a cemetery if there's one close by. You learn so much about a culture. And you see that some of these people lived 100 or 200 years ago. And in Graceland, some of the movers and shakers, some of the names and people, some of the most well-known streets in this city or some of the well-known businesses in this city, those names, those people who established those things are buried in Graceland.
Yeah.
A Marshall Field, a Potter Palmer, as in Palmer House, a Daniel Burnham, as in the Burnham Plan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a really rich historical place. It's almost like a history book come to life.
Yeah.
Or death, if you will.
Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit about Grayson because I have been there many, many times. Like I said, later in the show, we'll talk a little bit about Jerry Lewis and why, for all of his polarizing personality, and he certainly was a polarizing figure, and don't get me wrong, I understand that. But at the same time, I really believe he was one of the greatest entertainers, and I'll explain why. And then we will also talk about, as I said, Bruce on Broadway. You're gonna wanna listen to this.
Okay.
We're gonna have some fun with that. This weekend, of course, or this week.
Yeah.
Lady Di, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
She passed away on August 31st. So in the Pop Culture Club, we'll talk about a little bit about Lady Di and what her legacy is in terms of pop culture. And what an icon. And she really changed pop culture. Because there weren't many people that had her kind of fame. She was an icon. But at the same time, she had this weird thing with the royal family, which there's a whole other mystique on that. And there's not many people that were able to turn royalty into celebrity. And she did. And so we're going to discuss just what is Lady Di's legacy. And here's one to throw at you. Could you imagine? You certainly were, I'm sure, covering that story.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And remember how it was so dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine if Lady Diana died in today's world with social media?
Oh, yeah.
Could you imagine the enormity? Yeah. I mean, that was already an enormous story. But the ability for the world to have coalesced through social media?
Yeah.
That would have been, it already did that without social media.
And but again, the media at that time, we almost had instantaneous coverage.
Right.
As soon as
it happened.
The crash occurred, there was video there within minutes.
Yeah.
One, because they were following her.
Right, exactly. Because, yeah, I mean, literally.
She was
they were following her. That's why she crashed.
Right, and so the coverage there was almost instantaneous because once they were able to get the hookup from the video cameras there, And we still had cell phone technology, though it wasn't what we have today.
Right.
So you could have reporters going live with radio stations there. And so it still had an
It was immediate, but I'm just saying, but it would have been tenfold.
Oh, right. Yeah.
If there was a social media aspect, which didn't exist. So we'll talk a little about that. Okay. And then later on in the show, I'll be talking about the results of my decluttering summer.
Ooh.
As I was decluttering my house of many storage bins and much garbage. So I will let you know about that, too. So lots on the docket, and I'm hoping that in North Korea the sun will come out tomorrow. And to find out if it will, it's 2:31. I'm Elton Jim filling in for Dave Plyer here at WGN 720. And right now, to let us know what's going on, is Roger the Happy Roger Badish.
I don't know about how happy, but we'll get through it.
And Lord, it took me back to something that I lost somewhere, somehow along the way. On a Sunday morning sidewalk, I'm wishing, Lord, that I was stoned. But there's something about a Sunday that makes the body feel alone. And it's nothing worse than dying. That's half as lonesome as the sound of the something about a Sunday. And Sunday morning coming down.
Oh, Johnny Cash.
Yeah, you're the man in black, too.
Written by Kris Kristofferson. Yeah. Sunday morning coming down. Sunday morning coming down to you right now. It's about 2:37 here. We'll be here till 5 a.m. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer on this Memorial Day weekend. Hello, you cheeky monkeys. Anybody been watching the Gong? Well, Roger, have you watched the new Gong Show?
No, thank you.
I was never a fan of the Gong Show. I was not.
Okay.
I was intrigued by the fact that Mike Myers of course, Austin Powers and Wayne and Garth fame, Saturday Night Live, was going to host it, and he's hosting it as a completely different personality.
Mm-hmm.
He never breaks character. He's Tommy Maitland, a British chat show host, and he never breaks character. He's got full prosthetic makeup on. You wouldn't even know it's him. And he's hilarious. And that's why I watch it.
Yeah.
And he comes out and he says, "Hello, you cheeky monkeys."
His mannerisms, though?
Couldn't tell.
I can.
Oh, can you?
Yeah.
Don't you love that? Have you ever watched it?
Did you see? I've seen minutes of one episode.
Do you see when he dances across the...
I don't need to see that.
Oh, listen to Russ. Here we go. Oh,
I have more important things to do with my time.
And Sunday morning coming down. And Sunday morning coming down.
Oh, the sun will come out tomorrow, Roger. Oh, Roger, Roger, Roger. So what I like to call this show, the few times that I've filled in the 2 to 5 hour.
Yeah.
Now, be careful. Listen to the inflection.
Oh, okay.
I like to call this the Wee Wee Hour show.
Hello.
Not the Wee Wee Hours.
The O-U-I, as in French?
No, the wee-wee hours. Because when do you usually have to get up in the middle of the night to do? Around 2:30.
In the wee small hours of the morning?
Yeah, so this is the wee-wee hours of the morning.
Okay.
That's my show. Elton Jim's wee-wee hours show. If you know what I mean. And there's a lot of guys with Flomax problems that know exactly what I'm talking about.
Hello.
I went to an Eagles concert about 3 or 4 years ago when... before Glenn Frey passed away. It was down that final tour. And, you know, the Eagles are always a male-oriented band. More male fans than female fans.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of guys at this Eagles concert. Many more men than women. So the Eagles, they did the show in two sets. They did one set, took a break, and did another set. So usually... Roger, when you go to any kind of a public event in a large arena, mm-hmm. where is the longer bathroom line?
Oh, it's always the men's.
The men's? Really? Boy, you and I must
oh,
go.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
I'm editing news here at the same time.
I'm multitasking. So at
Well, you know what? The fact is you're not multitasking.
Because
if you were multitasking, yeah. you would have answered my question correctly. See, multitasking, let me define it for you, Roger. That means actually doing two things at the same time correctly, which is what you did not do.
I just doing two things at the same time.
Okay, so you can do them shabbily.
No, I can do them equally.
Well, you didn't.
I didn't say I was doing equally... perfectly. I actually had to stop doing the one to make sure that I heard
you
correctly.
Okay, here we go. Take two.
So you're saying
So
that,
Roger, if yes. you ever go to an event in a large arena, where would the longer line be for the lavatory?
The women's washroom.
You are wrong.
No.
North Korea breath.
yes, because that's the
well,
one.
Well, not at the Eagles, not at this Eagles concert.
Well, because there would be more men there.
There were so
women.
Many guys, right. and so they break for
There's
the
a potty break.
They say, and even Glenn Frey says we have to go to the bathroom.
Wow.
And he wasn't joking because when the lights went up, because the place was all with Eagles fans who are all in their 60s or 70s or even 80s.
Right.
Immediately when the lights went up, polo shirts and brown khakis. That's all you saw. Rise up and head to the bat. You went out into the concourse?
No, wait, I got my brown khakis.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just looked.
Well, that's why I said that, Roger. I was hoping you could multitask and look down at your pants.
I'm wearing a nice dress shirt.
Well, yeah. Okay. You look fine. But you would have fallen right into that category.
I probably would have.
Yeah.
Because I love the Eagles.
Well, and so you go onto the concourse. The line for the men's bathroom was around the block. The woman's bathroom, you could have shot a cannon in there and not hit anybody.
But on a usual concert, it's the women's bathroom.
But my point is that there were so many guys there, or these guys in their 60s and 70s, that they had to go to the bathroom.
Oh,
they literally had to take this break, or I think we would have had a Depends
moment
accident in the entire Allstate Arena. You know, like the interesting thing is, like in the 70s, 40 years ago, you'd go to a concert, like an Eagles concert, and you'd smell cannabis, right?
Right, right.
Now when you go to an Eagles, you smell urine from their Depends.
Oh, my God.
So do you ever listen for a song and try to get that as, like, the potty break song?
You know what? I don't like the potty break song. That's Joe Romano, our producer tonight. I know what you're talking about. First of all, I don't believe in the potty break at all. I think when you get in that seat, you should already have eaten. You should already have gotten your something to drink, and you should have certainly taken care of your lavatory needs. There's no such thing as a potty break. You're at a concert. You're there to enjoy the music. There's no such thing as a bad song. I don't believe that you should get up and say, I don't know this one. I'm going to the lobby. I hate that. I'm there. If it's 2.5 hours, I'm there in my seat for 2.5 hours. That's just me.
Nah.
Why? See, well, look at Roger. Yeah. Well, that's why, because you got your brown khakis on.
I'm older.
What does that mean? Well, you got to go.
You know what they say. When you got to go, you got to go.
So what do you do, Joe? Do you look for the potty break song?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Joe's already had 4 potty breaks. He looks for the potty break bit during my show.
Yeah.
He's like, I saw him like before. He's like, he's looking. I gave him this rundown of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that Graceland Cemetery thing. I think I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom during that.
I thought it was during the Johnny Cash. I thought he kind of whispered near.
Yeah. Well,
I'll be back.
Yeah. He went out during Tomorrow.
Yeah.
When I played that. And then
this is the first time I've sat down.
Yeah. He looked at the rundown and he's been in the whole show in the bathroom.
Yeah. He says, I'm going to take care of business.
Yeah. He goes, this whole, he goes, he looked at this. He goes, Elton Jim's show tonight. The whole show's a potty break.
Wow.
Well, it's the Wee Wee Hour show.
Yeah, okay.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. Or I should not. I guess I should call it. Next time I do this, I'm going to call it the potty break show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of potty breaks, I got to go edit some audio.
You know, my voice for Roger is like running a sink.
Oh, man.
He's got to get up and go now.
I got to go take care of some audio. Yeah. I'll be right back.
Okay. Elton Jim filling in for David Plyer this morning. We'll be here till 5 o'clock. We'll take a quick break. And as I said, I want to talk a little bit about Graceland Cemetery, one of the great attractions. Everybody talks about the Picasso and Millennium Park and the Art Institute and all these different areas. And, of course, the great restaurants here in Chicago. I add Graceland Cemetery to that list of great places that you should visit if you're both a tourist as well as someone who lives in this area. And I'll explain why right after this. Elton Jim with you here until 5 o'clock, filling in for Dave Plyer. No switching. Elton Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, filling in for David Plyer this morning. Be here till 5 o'clock. I'm a lifelong Chicagoan, born in the Northwest Side, right around Cicero Avenue and Belmont. Actually, good old Roscoe Street was the street I was born and raised on. So I've lived there my whole life, and I've certainly, know all the touristy places that we have grown up knowing in this area, whether it's the Picasso and Daly Center, which I have advocated to move. I believe we should move the Picasso. She's been there long enough, and I think they should move her to Millennium Park, where more people will take advantage of seeing her and appreciating her more as a work of art, because I think right now Daly Plaza is not really a meeting ground anymore for Chicagoans or tourists. It's Millennium Park, and so that's a Picasso, folks. That's a Pablo Picasso sculpture. It deserves a more prominent setting. And right now, the most prominent setting that we have in this city is Millennium Park. So Picasso's been at Daly Center for 50 years. That's fine. It's time. Everybody moves. You don't have to stay there forever. I think the Picasso needs to go to Millennium. But obviously, there's Millennium Park. There's the Art Institute. There's the Adler Planetarium. There's Wrigley Field. The whole museum campus, obviously. Michigan Avenue, which I'm looking at right now here from the WGN Showcase Studio. The Allstate Showcase Studio. But we've got so many amazing tourist attractions here in the city. Obviously, our architecture is something that is prominent. But between the restaurants and places to go, Chicago is very rich. And one place that I think deserves to be included in interesting places to go and see in this city is Graceland Cemetery. It's at 4001 North Clark. It's right on the corner. You can't miss it. At Clark and Irving. And if you're going to Wrigley Field, you can't miss it. It's two blocks. That's not two blocks. Like a mile. It's right on the corner. So, you've got Clark and Addison, Clark and Irving. It's the next busy street. And Graceland Cemetery remains one of the most prominent cemeteries for some not only prominent Chicago residents, former obviously, but even some nationally and internationally known people. I was reminded of this when I was in college. I had a great teacher. His name was Dr. Andrew Prinz at Elmhurst College. And he was an urban studies government teacher, and one of our assignments was to visit Graceland Cemetery and write a report about what we saw there, all the different grave sites and why, and all these prominent people. And I had never heard of Graceland Cemetery, never had been there, and I walked out of there. I just felt so enriched. I was like, wow, this is a piece of history. Right here in this city, all these names that we've grown up with. Marshall Field, buried. There was a guy named Marshall Field, folks. The store just didn't get that name out of the blue. Buried there. Potter Palmer. Ever hear of a place called the Palmer House? Yeah, Potter Palmer, buried in Graceland. I was, I read this week a great story by Rick Kogan in the Tribune that Ernie Banks was buried in Graceland, which makes sense because it's so close to Wrigley. Literally, you could hear Wrigley Field from Graceland. And he had a new monument erected on his grave, and so there was a small ceremony there, and it just reminded me of what a cool place Graceland Cemetery is. I visit cemeteries quite a bit when I travel. I've been one of the coolest cemeteries, which is well known, obviously, is the cemetery in Paris. It's taken on, you know, a kind of iconic stature because Jim Morrison is buried there, and in the 60s and 70s, mostly in the 70s because he died in the 70s, when he died, it became a hangout. But at that same cemetery is Oscar Wilde. You know, think about that, you know? There's these people, these legends that you hear about, and then there they are. What's interesting, I think it's Mount Carmel. There's Queen of Heaven and Mount Carmel are two cemeteries that are next to one another in Hillside, right on Roosevelt Road and Wolf. And you turn in, and there's Al Capone's grave. Al Capone. I mean, we hear about this guy all the time. There's his grave. The great equalizer is death, folks. And so I have always found it interesting to go to cemeteries in a lot of cities and towns that I visit, just because you really get a sense of, first of all, you just see these gravestones. Some of them are hundreds of years old, and you're like, oh my gosh, this was Civil War, before the Civil War. This was, you know, depending on where you're at, especially if you're on the East Coast and you're places like Boston and in that kind of area there and the whole New England thing. I mean, you've got people there, settlers from the 1600s that are buried there. As well as I said, you go to some cemeteries and there's some famous people. If you've never been to Graceland, I swear, go there. You can spend 2 hours there. You can get a map and you will see, like Daniel Burnham, known for the Burnham Plan about, you know, preserving our lakeshore. Daniel Burnham's grave is on a small island in a lake. It's the coolest thing. There's a small little island, and you can't get there, but you're on the shore of this little lake in Graceland, and on this little island is Daniel Burnham's gravestone, which is very fitting since he was, you know, about preserving and having tranquility, and there he is resting in tranquility. Very cool to see that. I want to see what Ernie's looks like now. But like I said, Daniel Burnham, here's Roger Ebert is buried there. As I said, Marshall Field. John Kinsey, who is one of the first settlers. You know Kinsey Street, which is right around here? This is where Harry Carey's is. Kinsey Street was named after John Kinsey, one of the first settlers of Chicago, buried in Graceland. There's a street called McClurg Court. It's right down here downtown. Well, Alexander McClurg was a Civil War general. You hear about Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism, Joseph Medill, also a publisher, buried there.
So does the map have a bunch of information on it as
well? Yeah. So it has the names and where you can find it, and there's a little background as to who these people are. Mies van der Rohe, the architect who's done some of the most internationally well-known buildings, not only here in Chicago, but around the world, buried at Graceland. Alan Pinkerton, the Pinkerton detective, who I believe killed Dillinger, buried in Graceland. George Pullman, the Pullman car, buried in Graceland. Louis Sullivan, who one of the greatest architects in the world, and who did like the old Carson Peary Scott building on State Street, which is now a Target. But Louis Sullivan, buried there. Charles Wacker, Wacker Drive, named after Charles Wacker, buried in Graceland Cemetery. Jack Johnson, the boxer, buried there. There's some people that aren't even well known, but there's some amazing grave monuments, like huge statues, because this is where a lot of rich people, whether they were well known or not, were buried. And though, so they spent big money. There's the coolest Grim Reaper statue that is now, it's copper, so it's now green. And you go to this grave, and it's on the map, and there's the shroud, and it's all green now. and it looks so menacing and so cool. There's the former, one of the old commissioners of baseball. I never heard of him a long time ago. His gravesite is a baseball. And all the teams that were in baseball at that time are named on the baseball. It's a huge baseball with laces, and it's on the top of his gravestone. You go to the Marshall Field and Potter Palmer monuments, and they literally are like Roman monuments. These things were designed by major architects. They are impressive. There are columns and benches and water features. It is very cool. And you say, what's in a cemetery? I'll tell you, Graceland Cemetery, if you've never been there, on Irving and Clark in Chicago, it's worth 2 hours out of your time. And the great thing is, Chicago is this hustling, bustling city. Like I said, that's right in the middle of Lakeview where Wrigley Field is. And yet in the middle of all that hustle and bustle is this very cool and serene place. And you will learn about history. You will learn about the city, some of the most prominent people. And you will just get a different experience. Everybody, you know, we talk about tourist attractions. There's a little offbeat place that a lot of people may never go to. And you can actually be in a place where other people haven't. And that's always something fun to do. So I urge you, if you've never been there, on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, or maybe just during the week if you have time, go to Graceland Cemetery. The coolest one, Charles Dickens's brother is buried in Graceland Cemetery. Apparently he was penniless. Charles Dickens's brother was a pauper. All that there is his marker is a small little round circle with a number on it, not even his name. Charles Dickens's brother buried. This is a Christmas Carol, folks. This is, a Tale of Two Cities author. His brother, penniless, buried in Graceland Cemetery. Check it out. It's pretty cool. I'm Elton Jim, filling in for David Plyer this morning. I'll be here till 5 o'clock, but right now it is 3 o'clock. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you are an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer here at WGN Radio. Be here till 5 a.m. I'm staying here until 5. I don't know about you, but I hope you will. What else are you doing right now? What else could you possibly be doing? So stay tuned right here, 7:20 a.m. Listen what Elton Jim's got up his sleeve until 5 a.m. One of the things he has up on his sleeve today, right now, is a little trip to one of my favorite little cubby holes, one of my favorite shelters, if you will, given the climate right now. It's the Pop Culture Club, and the charter member of the Pop Culture Club is a friend of mine, as well as a well-known Chicago producer of radio, and also one of our leading parody song guys, Mick Kaler. How you doing there, Mixter?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
So are you already, Mick writes a lot of parody songs that appear on WGN-TV on the morning news. So I would assume that, I mean, with this news, I mean, what do you have in ways of a North Korean nuclear bomb test parody song? Is that ripe for parody?
It may be. I mean, if anybody's still around to listen to it, yeah, you never know.
Well, if you listen to Roger. Oh, my gosh.
It's the eve of destruction.
Yeah. Oh.
I knew her once.
Yeah. Yeah. Hi-o. It must be 3 a.m. So, I wanted to talk to Mick, like I said, charter member of the Pop Culture Club here. And so, what was your take on one Jerry Lewis?
Well, it was, first of all, his death wasn't, a shock because he'd been ill.
Yeah, no, obviously. Yeah. He's 91 and he had been sick for a while.
But I mean, he had heart.
But I'm just saying, where do you fall in? There's, Jerry Lewis is very polarizing.
Yeah.
And people either think he's a genius or think he's a jerk. And there's really nothing in the middle. You know?
Yeah.
So where do you fall?
I fall into I wasn't one of those ardent, I love everything this guy does, but I appreciated, what he brought to, again, getting to pop culture, getting, just what he brought to you know, pop culture and entertainment. I mean, not just the stuff with Dean Martin. I always liked the story that when he was directing film, he was the first one that started doing where you looked at dailies every day, the people that made the films, to see how the movie was going.
Yeah, instead of waiting for it to come back from the, you know, from the lab,
right?
The film being actually developed, and he would he invented the system that directors use today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just one of his contributions, but it's things like that, innovations that people forget about because they just remember the goofy movies and things like that. And, of course, when I think of Jerry Lewis, I know it's more of a modern-day thing, I can't stop but think of the King of Comedy.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, people of our age and our generation, I mean, by the time we became aware of Jerry Lewis, we really knew him from the muscular dystrophy telethon.
Right.
It was in the mid 70s. He was past his prime in terms of obviously you know, his work with Dean Martin, which was what, from 1946 to 1956, and then he had a string of movies in the 60s like The Nutty Professor and The Bellboy, the Delicate Delinquent, all these kind of movies. So he was a little past his prime, and that was, and I remember making jokes and saying, not really knowing who Jerry Lewis was in terms of what he had done before, I just knew, I said, how does this guy have a job one day a year?
Yeah, just works one day, raises
yeah.
money.
What a great job, you know. But I'll have to tell you, as time went on, I had he was a buffoon, he was a clown, he was a, you know, humanitarian, he was a philanthropist. He was a jerk, and he was a genius, and he was all of those things. But I'll tell you, I got more of a appreciation for him. I went to see him, I believe it was in the early 90s. He did mm-hmm. he did his show at the Drury Lane in Oak Brook.
Okay.
And I expected to go there and laugh at him, not with him.
Right, yeah, just kind of mock the whole
thing. Yeah, I'm like, this is like so such bad showbiz that I have to see this in person. And so I was expecting to go there and be laughing at him, not with him, and about him, mm-hmm. and just saying, boy, this is really, you know, shtick and schlock. And I have to say, there's no doubt that what he did, some of it was corny, no doubt about that. Some of it was shtick. He took... I mean, this is a grown man at that time, probably in his 60s or 70s. He took a jar and stuck it in his mouth.
With all the faces and the noise.
Right. But here's the thing. I came away from that show. It was a two-hour show, no break. And I came away from that with a whole new respect for this guy because at times, as arrogant and indulgent and whatever you want to say, egotistical, you name it. At the same time, for two straight hours, that guy was entertaining people.
Right.
He was the consummate entertainer. Whatever it took, it was a corny joke. It was a tap dance. It was a directing the band. It was some, you know, slapstick thing. It was, you know, a legitimate song. It was something, you know, a bit with just a bunch of canes. I mean, you name it. But this guy, for 2 hours, did not stop because he came from that vaudeville tradition of that you get out there and, you know, all those guys like Bob Hope and even Bing Crosby, all those guys, if you watch some of these guys in old tapes or old movies, they might not be the greatest singers and the greatest dancers and the greatest comedians, but they did everything.
Right.
Because they had to.
Yeah, well, and what you're saying with all that is it was – full-on effort.
Yeah. This guy was a this guy, at the very end of the day, what I would say is he was a totally committed entertainer. You could like or dislike him personally. You could like or dislike his act. But mm-hmm. you could not take away the fact that this guy, for 2 hours, was working his butt off to entertain and find a laugh any way he could. And he would throw himself under the bus and be a fool or jump around and fall around. It didn't matter. He got physically hurt quite a bit with a lot of his slapstick. But this guy was a consummate entertainer. And I got to tell you, with the passing of Jerry Lewis, and we've lost a few people like Don Rickles of that era, And now there was a comedian, Shelley Berman, which a lot of people may not know the name. However, if you ever watched Curb Your Enthusiasm,
he played Larry David's
father. Shelley Berman played Larry David's father, and he was hilarious on that show. But I think there's really an era of that consummate entertainer, of somebody who really lived and died and breathed entertainment, who went on a stage, had enough training that they could do anything to entertain. And I think that's kind of gone. We don't see that anymore.
No, you won't see the likes of somebody like a Jerry Lewis. And, you know, you mentioned the telethons, and to be honest, I mean, I know that they still do that, whole event every Labor Day. Once Jerry Lewis left that, there was no interest.
Well, they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
That's not even on TV. And I wonder he raised over at least $1 billion, if not $2 billion for that in 50-some years. And now I wonder and they sort of unceremoniously got rid of him. And there's been a lot of controversy about that. Like I said, Jerry, in many ways, dug his own holes, and polarized.
Controversy,
yeah, sure. Polarized people. I'm not making, any excuses or apologies for him. But I have to say, in the 4 or 5 years since he's been on, I don't hear about MDA anymore. I hope that there's still
game. The event that it was, we got to this one's going to be on. And then they had the local cut-ins and all that. And it just wasn't the same after that.
And there was some amazing entertainment. I used to watch I would stay up all night and watch that. There was something kind of reassuring. You could wake up in the night at 3 in the morning, and you turn on Channel 9, and there was Jerry.
Yeah.
Still going, Ed, can I have a temp? And I have to say, now you mentioned one of the great movies. On Monday, on Labor Day, which is fitting, on the Turner Classic Movies, they're going to do a mini Jerry Lewis marathon.
Okay.
So The Nutty Professor, which is his masterpiece, is going to be on, and this movie from 1983, which Mick referenced, The King of Comedy, directed by Martin Scorsese, co-starring Robert De Niro and
Sandra Bernhardt.
Who was amazing in this, and Jerry Lewis as a guy named Jerry Langford, who was basically playing like the Johnny Carson of the time, like he was the leading late night talk show legend.
Yeah.
And Jerry plays this very dark, and plays it almost as probably very close to the real Jerry Lewis.
That's what I was going to say, and I think that's one of the things I found so interesting about the movie is, even though Jerry Lewis wasn't a talk show host himself, I think you saw his real persona within that role.
Yeah, and so if you've never seen it, you can probably get it on Netflix somewhere, but it's going to be on Turner Classic Movies this on Monday, I believe, sometime in the evening. The King of Comedy. If you just see two Jerry Lewis movies, see The Nutty Professor and The King of Comedy. And once again, you and I, we grew up at a time where people don't understand. Go back on YouTube, especially now you have the opportunity. People don't understand that Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, World War II ended, and that was a long and very scary war for people. And we had a lot of rationing going on here. People's lives were not only threatened by, the German menace of Hitler, but people's lives were also totally uprooted. With men taken away, wives were raising families and having to get a job. I mean, there were rations, with food and supplies. And when World War II ended, this country needed to smile again. And this is the same thing that happened with the Beatles in 64 after the Kennedy assassination in 63. We needed to smile again. And there were the Beatles. And the same thing happened in World War II. World War II ended in 1946. When everything was done, Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin became the Beatles of the post-World War II era.
Yeah, they were sun gods of comedy, and I saw, there's been a lot of documentaries about Jerry Lewis, and I think they were doing, three or four shows a day.
Yeah, I mean, there were crowds outside in Times Square that rivaled Elvis and the Beatles. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was that kind of mania.
Yeah.
And of course, they were making tons of money at the time, and at that time, the money you hear now, it might not be so much, but back then it was a lot of money, and they couldn't go anywhere without being mobbed.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Go on YouTube. You go, just hit Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, you know, Paramount Theater, and you'll see this amazing footage. So, like I said, you may not know a lot about Jerry. You may love Jerry. You may hate him. But you can't take away the fact that he was a consummate entertainer. I would urge you to look up and watch The Nutty Professor and The King of Comedy to get a real sense of what kind of entertainer this guy was. I'm Jim Toronto. I'm with Mick Kaler here. We're in the Pop Culture Club. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto here at WGN, filling in for David Plyer. And we're in the midst of a Pop Culture Club discussion with Mick Kaler. We wanted to talk a little bit about Lady Diana. But before that, we've actually got a little phone call here. Let's go. This is kind of cool. We've got somebody, Mick, from Toronto, Canada.
Oh.
Oops. Yeah.
Well, hello, Elton Jim. Good morning.
Hey. Oh, is this Johnny?
Yes, and good morning to you.
This is Johnny from Michigan, but you're in Toronto.
Yep, I met Tim Curry yesterday, and Mel Campbell, and Patricia Quinn, and Barry Boswick.
Oh, really? Wow, yeah, so is there a Comic-Con or something?
Yeah, a Rocky Horror Reunion at Fan Expo Canada. I'm going home today. I'm on the train. Well, I'm at Tim Hortons right now across the street from the train station.
Oh, you got to love Tim Hortons. They have in Toronto, they have an amazing maple syrup donut.
I had the Canadian maple donut.
Is so good, Johnny. I am right now envying you. That is an amazing. Tim Hortons is like a Dunkin' Donuts. They're everywhere in Canada. And they got this maple donut that is unbelievable. Oh.
Yep, and I got to see Rocky Horror for the first time in a movie theater Friday night. That was fun.
Did you dress up?
No, not a language, but a lot of fun.
So you didn't dress up as Frank Enfurter, Dr. Frank Enfurter?
No, I wore a T-shirt.
I'd like to see a Johnny from Michigan in some... some garter belts and
stockings.
Yeah, right.
I got to hang out with my friend Natalie and her husband Sean.
Natalie. Nice.
You're with me on Facebook, Elton, so you can look at my pictures and all.
Yeah, I will. So how are you feeling? Are you doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I saw Second City for the first time in Toronto last night. That was awesome.
You got it. For those who may not aware, Johnny was a regular caller in the afternoon, and we literally met him outside the window here at the Allstate Showcase Studio one day, and he caught our attention because he
my dad made President Eisenhower's dental crown.
How do you make
with greatness?
Mick, how do you turn that down when someone says, my father made President Eisenhower's dental crowns? How do you not talk to that guy?
You have to, absolutely.
Yeah, so Johnny came. That's a great, I heard that's a great pickup line at bars too, right, Johnny?
Well, I did go to a bar here. I went to a little strip club over here two nights ago. So.
Hi-yo, listen to Johnny. Wow. I think that line about Eisenhower's dental work, that was a good pickup line in like 1942.
Yeah, that's again right there.
Yeah, I don't know if it really works well in 2017. But Johnny is a great guy, and he was very sick when he was a young kid. You had, what, two heart surgeries, three heart surgeries?
Yeah, I'm born with a hole in my heart. I've had two open
heart surgeries. We all were born with a hole in our heart, Johnny.
Yeah. I've had two open heart surgeries. I've had two cleft palate surgeries so I can speak and hearing impaired, and I take medication for bipolarness.
Man.
You know,
and
so.
Yet he has got an amazing attitude and and zest for life. He travels more than the Secretary of State. Every time you talk to Johnny, he lives in Michigan. That's why he's Johnny from Michigan. But he travels everywhere. He's on trains, planes, automobiles. And you really are a great example of somebody who just goes out there and lives life to its fullest. And
I would like to say, anybody that knows me from your programs I've been on, I'd like to say thank you for following me on Facebook and all that. You guys are great to me. And you're great to me too, and so is George Bliss. And if you see George, tell him I said hello.
All right, Johnny. Well, it's always I appreciate you taking time. It's 4:40 in the morning in Toronto, aren't you? No, are you in Central Time or Eastern Time?
Eastern is 4:40. My train. Yeah. The train station opens at 5:30, but the two guys in my room are having a snoring competition. I saw them.
Yeah, Johnny usually stays at hostels at all these places, so you always have a roommate.
Cool.
Yeah, there's nine other guys in the room, and two guys are having a snoring competition.
Nine other guys. No wonder why you're in such a good mood, Johnny.
But Second City was awesome last night. My first time seeing Second City, and so that was awesome.
There you go. Yeah, well, some of the greatest Second City people from Canada. John Candy and Dan Aykroyd and Gilda Radner were all from the Canadian Second City area there. Well, Johnny, thank you for taking time out on your trip. I got to run here, but it's always great to talk to you.
Yep, and the last thing, I got the Canadian beer for the holiday tomorrow. I got three cans of Canadian beer.
Oh, listen to you. Well, take care of yourself.
Have a great weekend. Tell George and everyone that says hello, and thank you for taking my call today.
No problem, Johnny.
It's a pleasure.
Always take your call. You're a great guy. Love you. Take care.
God bless. Bye.
There's Johnny.
All right.
From Michigan. Yeah, this guy was... He's really a nice guy, and
I remember you guys talking to him.
It's unbelievable. He travels everywhere. He just jumps on trains and buses, and you go on his Facebook page and you see this guy. He's taking pictures with everybody. He just really has a zest for life. Both of his parents sadly have passed away, and so he's on his own. And he's had some health problems and some emotional problems, but he's working his way through it, and he certainly doesn't let it get him down, which is a great example for everybody. So it's good to hear from Johnny from Michigan. So, Mick, I wanted to talk in the Pop Culture Club about Lady Di. This week, on August 31st, was the 20th anniversary of Lady Diana's death. And the one question that I have, or not much of a question, but it's kind of a thing to think about, is, I mean, for those of us who lived through that, it was an amazing event. From a media standpoint, the coverage of it, you know, it fed right into the 24-hour news cycle. But could you imagine if Lady Diana had passed away under those same circumstances, but in today's world of social media?
Yeah, that would have been, as much of a phenomenon as it was in 97, it would be tenfold.
Yeah, I mean, the ability of, I mean, it was there. I mean, the internet was around, but it was in its very, you know, infant days, and so everybody was not, you know, as connected as they are now, obviously with the smartphone and things. And so, and yet that event was still able to galvanize the world despite
that. Let's put it this way, Jim, and I remember that night when the news came out that she died. I was at a reunion at Ditka's, a WLS radio reunion, and it was, you know, kind of a late night. Okay, today, the minute that story happens, the whole world knows it, like you said, social media, texting and tweeting and all that other stuff. I didn't know. Nobody knew there, okay? We didn't know, and I was driving home that night, and I heard that the BBC was on the local channels. And at first I thought, oh, the Queen must have died.
Oh, right. Yeah, that would make sense. 10. Right, yeah.
And then as I kept driving home, I realized it was Lady Diana, Princess Diana. And then they didn't even say at that time, you know, that it was this whole paparazzi chase in the tunnel and all that in the cars.
Right.
So I got to be honest, I thought she killed herself.
Oh, wow.
I thought, oh, my God, she, you know.
Yeah, because she was going through a lot of stuff, yeah.
Pressures and things like that. I get home, and then I turn on the news, and then I see the insane way that everything unfolded. Again, like you said about social media, we would know this in 30 seconds, everything that happened today.
Well, not even know about it, but, I mean, what was so amazing about that, and there was a really good special on NBC the other night with both Harry and William, her sons, as well as some of her friends remembering the death and the aftermath and the funeral and things like that. And, you know, the boys were saying how, you know, they really did not want to be out in public, but they knew they had a duty as both heirs to the throne and, you know, her heirs to be out in the public, and it was said it was very difficult. I mean, don't forget, William was 15. I think Harry was 12. These were young kids that were all of a sudden dealing not with just, you know, Lady Di passing away, but their mom. These are young kids who lost their mom at 15 and 12. That's not easy.
Yeah, and again, under such horrible circumstances.
Yeah, and so it was very interesting to see their impressions of it as they look back on it now, 20 years later, both in their 30s. But what I found really interesting, you know, like I said, not only would you know about it, but think about the way people, you know, have opinions and react with that instant ability to react to something. I mean, when you see these pictures now of all the flowers that were just lining the streets of England, it was like walls of flowers. It was unbelievable when you saw that by Kensington Garden and by Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
But like I said, if we had the instant ability now to, like, whether it was, you know, to say something, you know, oh, I feel so bad. I mean, I think the internet would have crashed.
For sure, it would have crashed. Twitter, all that stuff would have just been a mess.
Yeah, I mean, it's really amazing. And now when you look back at her legacy, what was interesting about Lady Diana and why there are very few celebrities that can match what she brought at the time, and even since her passing, she really was kind of a transitional figure. She almost helped really define the modern day pop culture, because the good part of the last part, you know, at least the last 5 or 6 or 7 years of her life, she couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
She was hounded every move she made, and she had this interesting dichotomy that she was able to take. She became famous because of being a royal, but she turned it into celebrity, and no one had done that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the queen was the queen, but she wasn't a tabloid celebrity.
Well, part of that, too, was, and even though Diana was in the tabloids a lot when she was still married to Charles, the minute that she was, you know, when they divorced, then she didn't have, quote, royal duties and things, so she could be out there even more so. And then, again, like you said, the impact of her celebrity, you know, probably grew 10 times.
Yeah, and you know, when you think back at how the press covered her, and you know, the thing about Lady Di, I think, which is unique as well, is think about, once again, on this from a social media standpoint. In today's world, everybody has the immediate ability to say, I like this person, I hate this person, right?
Yeah.
What's interesting about Lady Di is I don't think anybody really disliked her.
No, she was, you know, if you didn't have any opinion, that was one thing, but it was, you know, overwhelmingly a favorite.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because, I mean, first of all, everybody remembers the fairy tale wedding, which was broadcast on television live.
Sure.
And that was even before the days of CNN.
Yeah, I remember getting up very early that morning.
Yeah.
I had to go to work, and it was already in full bloom because it's in England.
So, you know, you remember the fairy tale wedding, but then, you know, you have to realize that we realized then as time went on that whole wedding and that marriage, sadly, was a sham, even though she did not know that.
Yeah.
That this guy, you know, that Prince Charles was still in love with, you know, Camilla, who he had met many years before, and was probably having an affair with her at the same time. And, you know, Lady Di thought she was married and having a marriage. As she said famously, the problem with my marriage was there were 3 people in it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she she was never the victim. You know, she had the people on her side,
right,
in that divorce. And then she had all this humanitarian stuff that she did with the landmines, and she went out of her way early time in the AIDS crisis to actually shake hands and touch hands with
her. Children's charities.
Yeah, you know, and so she really, you know, she just kind of transformed and sort of went over all the different, you know, she was a celebrity and an icon, but then she was a humanitarian, and yet she was this royal, and as you said, she was a royal, but then she wasn't a royal anymore. And then, of course, this whole thing with Dodi Fayed and the waste. And then, ironically, she dies because of the paparazzi chasing her.
Right. Yeah, the victim of that whole thing that made her, you know, such a big deal.
Yeah. So but like I said, you know, when you look back at it, you really say, I mean, she would have been like 56 years old now. And you wonder, like, what would she be doing now?
Think of how many Twitter followers she'd have.
Oh, I mean, yeah. It's just amazing to see, especially in the way pop culture has increased in intensity since her passing. She would still be, you know, the, you know, pop culture icon of our time.
Yeah, she would be. And it's funny when you mention the paparazzi stuff, Jim, because I remember that night when she died, and I think it was George Clooney and Tom Cruise were calling in on Larry King, and they were doing all this talking about the paparazzi and all their, you know, overzealousness and chasing her down and all that. And at the time, I was, you know, it was 20 years ago, and I thought, okay, maybe all these photographers and press people will calm down their chase of celebrity. Complete opposite. It's gone the other way. It's tenfold now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. As I said, even if you look at someone like right now, who would you say is, do you think there's anyone in today's pop culture world that even comes close to the type of fame and notoriety and, as I said before, positive feeling? Like, who would you equate with today?
No, I would say, you know, as far as, you know, being known, you know, take a look at this Taylor Swift phenomenon this week when she puts out a video.
Yeah.
But again, that, you know, there's a lot of people that can't stand Taylor Swift.
Exactly. That's my point. Even if there's a Beyonce or a Taylor Swift, there's still people that don't like them.
And I'll tell you my favorite. Are the Kardashians.
Oh, that's, yeah, perfect. Exactly. I mean, they're very polarizing. There's people that love them or hate them.
Polarizing, Jim. I don't think they realize that family, how much they're despised.
Yeah. Well, they couldn't, because they wouldn't be able to go on like they do.
Right, exactly. And yet, you know, the TV shows keep, you know, upping their shows, and everybody wants to watch them. And it's like someday they're going to look back, you know, 20 years from now and go, boy, what a freak show we were.
And the one thing that always is a part of the Lady Di aftermath of her tragic death, of course, which I have a little personal interest in, obviously, was Elton John's performance of a reworked version of Candle in the Wind that he performed flawlessly and just stoically and admirably at her funeral. And I'll tell you, what was so cool about that, you know, I've always worn my Elton John fandom on my sleeve, and a lot of times people would always ask me, and still do, well, you know, why Elton John? Like, why are you so into Elton John? And what was amazing was that after that performance, everybody understood why.
Right, they
I
got
was
it.
A fan. They got it. I mean, he had a worldwide audience, maybe 30, 40 million people at the time, they said, watch that. And he performed that flawlessly, like a pro, as I said, stoically and yet emotionally, and he was under great pressure as well. You know, he knew her, and yet he just was able to, you know, focus. We talked about Jerry Lewis being committed earlier. He just is a pro.
Well, the other thing too, and people forget this part, and you know it well, Bernie Taupin, you know, Elton's lyricist, he had to rewrite that.
Right.
And
like a day.
Job too, where, okay, he gets to sit back. You know, he said Elton performed it, but Bernie is the one that's like, okay, I don't have much time, but I got to put this together.
Yeah, he did that within a couple of days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that was just a really cool moment to be an Elton John fan, because it was finally like, that's why I am an Elton John fan. What you just saw, that's why.
Well, one other thing about Elton that year, Jim, and you know this well too, you know, Elton had been sober for about 5 or 6 years, 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, when that happened. And earlier that year, Elton lost his good friend Johnny Versace to that crazy murder.
And Lady Di was at that funeral.
And she was consoling Elton. That's when they kind of, because they had a little fall.
Yeah.
That's when they kind of got back together as pals. So Elton loses Johnny Versace, then Princess Diana. And I remember thinking, boy, how can you stay sober and clean?
Oh, yeah.
Those two things. And yeah. I really admired Elton.
And he did.
Just soldiering through, you know?
Yeah, he did. We got Ray on the phone here. How you doing, Ray?
Doing very well, Jim, Mick. I love the conversation. a lot of fun. The point I wanted to make very quickly, and I think I'm a speck older than you fellows, the American concept of the British royal family prior to Princess Diana was that it was so staid and detached. She came in as a very young girl with that amazing wedding. She divorced or wound up divorced from Prince Charles and yet produced two heirs that truly seem regal in their nature, not just their pedigree. And then to die prematurely, as she did under such shocking circumstances, as both of you have mentioned, it just magnified the entire impact of it all. And Jim, as you were saying, her incredible sensitivity to truly cutting-edge issues of the day. But yeah, and you mentioned landmines, much more the AIDS thing. And you probably know the answer to this. Elton John was affiliated with a some kind of House of Mercy in London. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And I can't think of the name. Anyway, National Geographic had a thing on this.
Yeah.
And post-Princess, Lady Di was part of all this, which just made the events of 20 years ago this weekend so much more tragic. And as you both have said, here we are 20 years later. What other avenues of compassion would she have pursued?
Yeah, I mean, really, she brought so many things at that point, you know, to the forefront. And it would only couldn't imagine what she would have, what else she would have done, because I think she was committed. And her sons have learned that, too. And I think her sons are really good and proud and shining examples of taking her legacy. And it's going to be very interesting to see when William takes over the throne.
And I'm sorry, Jim, didn't mean to interrupt. Here would be my only question. Could Prince Charles really be the father of two such great kids?
I don't know. Ask Camilla. Thank you, Ray.
Take care.
Okay.
Well, you brings up a good point, because I think both those boys are definitely their mother's son.
Yeah, definitely. They are very proud, and they have every right to be. Mick, I assume it's 4 a.m. What are you doing? You can stick around a little more longer, can you?
What else am I going to do?
Yeah, that's what I said.
You talked about the streets of Chicago being empty. Whenever I hear that, I think of that movie, The Omega Man, okay?
Yeah, well, it's like Vanilla Sky out here. There's nobody on the streets. So after, we're going to take a quick break here, and then on the other side of the news, we'll come back with Mick to talk a little bit more about some pop culture stuff, because as I said, I've got the inside scoop on what Bruce Springsteen's Broadway show was really going to be like.
And
we will explore that. But right now, we'll take a quick break. Elton Jim filling in for Dave Plyer. No switching. Morning, girl, and good morning, guy. Good morning, everybody. It's about 10 minutes after 4 o'clock a.m. here at WGN. I'm Elton Jim filling in for David Plyer this morning, and I've got Mick Kaler on the line. Hello, Mixter.
Hey, what's happening?
We're talking a little pop culture. Before we go on to another topic, I wanted to just get another phone call here because Mark is on the line. And Mark wanted to have a few. We were talking about Lady Diana and how her death, you know, in the aftermath of her death, and what would her death like would have been like if she have died now in the wake of our ability and the power of social media. So Mark's got on the line here. How you doing there, Mark?
Oh, I'm pretty well right now. I wasn't going to comment so much on past versus present as what. Where does it leave a person if they are liked by everyone or trying to be liked by everyone? And that may be a crucial distinction. But there's a saying, woe to you if everyone speaks well to you. And woe is kind of an archaic word. It means you'll encounter a lot of sorrows if everyone speaks well of you. And imagine a person who is stretched, who is pulled in all different directions because everybody likes him and everybody wants him to do their thing. And I would also say, for instance, if a neo-Nazi spoke well of me, it would depend. If he said my writing was good, I'd still be okay with that. If he said, I think you are a person of great character, I would go, whoa,
right.
What is wrong with me?
Right.
And I don't want everybody to like me. And I guess my question would be, was Lady Di liked by everyone without trying to be, or was she liked by everyone because she made that a main goal of her existence?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, as I said, her celebrity is very unique, and it and I don't know if it will ever be duplicated in that. And when I said everybody liked her, I just meant that it seemed as if there was. I mean, some people could probably not have cared about her, but I didn't hear a lot of negativity even about her in her life. But to your point, you make a good point. You know. I think that, I think if you think about her, she was, 19 or 20 when she got married. She was thrown into an amazing pressure cooker of expectation from not only her in-laws, but the world. I mean, that was quite a wedding to live up to. And, you know, at that time, too, there was still this kind of mystique to the royal family. And so I don't think that she really had a full understanding of what she was in for. And as I said, sadly, I think that she was used in many ways. They needed someone to provide an heir.
Yes.
You know, they just needed someone to provide an heir, and she fit the bill. And I don't think she knew that.
Royalty with all its mystique and public image. At that young age, you probably don't even know who you are.
No, you don't. And so not only did she have to learn who she was, but she also had to learn this new responsibility of a persona to project out to the world while she's still discovering who she is. And then she's in this kind of sham marriage, which she wasn't aware it was a sham marriage until later on. So to be honest with you, there may have you make a good point. There may have been a part of her that needed to be liked, not from an ego standpoint, but just as a person who was trying to find themselves and really, you know, was at such a young age, was thrown into such a weird and unique situation that kind of she clearly wasn't getting that kind of love and support at home.
Yeah.
And so maybe she was looking to the outside world. And I think that a lot of people, when she passed away, there was a lot of people that didn't even know that they even really had a feeling about her one way or another until she passed away in such a tragic way that they said to themselves, boy, I really feel sad about this. While she was alive, they may have seen her picture in some magazines and not cared one way or the other. But when she passed away, and she passed away in such a tragic way at such a young age, it may have just struck people, but I don't think she was that calculated. I just think that she was a complex person, but I think she was a very vulnerable person too, and I think that she was far from perfect. She was very flawed, you know.
Well, I was going to say, if
you have a few close friends, you're better off than if you're famous and nobody really cares about you or not the right people.
Well, I was going to say, I think the big thing with Diana was, like Jim just brought up, all the circumstances. For all the circumstances she was involved in with, you know, this barely knowing Charles, she gets engaged, she has this huge wedding, all this pressure. I think the biggest thing was, through it all, look at the grace she really had. She was not some buffoon. She didn't, like, lash out at people. She might have had her private issues and things, but I think, you know, even before her death, I think everyone just admired, boy, everything you went through, and you just seemed to keep it together. And I think that's the biggest part about her.
And what's very interesting, when you look at the similarities and think about it's similar in a way of, look at the way that Jackie Onassis was reacted after JFK's death, where she married Aristotle Onassis. And look at what Lady Diana did after she divorced Charles and now was not officially a royal, but she certainly was the mother of the heir to the throne, eventual heir. They both went for, this Dodi Fayed came from a very rich family who could provide security, money-wise as well as physical security, could provide protection from the outside world, we thought, until this tragedy. But that, you know, Jackie Kennedy got a lot of heat for marrying Aristotle Onassis, but later on when you found out, she said she did that because she felt afraid. Because don't forget, her husband got shot right next to her.
Right.
And she said that she married Aristotle Onassis because he could provide for her and her kids, her two young kids, a form of protection and security where she would not be vulnerable because of his wealth. You know, they could have security as well as the financial security, which she also needed, but also the physical security of not being attacked again. That was a real thing. And Lady Di was the same way in that she was looking for refuge. She was so in the fishbowl that I think she just wanted to get away. And being with a rich guy like in the Fayed family provided that. But even then, the paparazzi found a way to crack that wall and ultimately, sadly, contributed to her death.
Sure.
So, yeah, thanks for the call there, Mark. Interesting comments there. I mean, it is certainly not an easy question. As I said, she was a very complex person and a very complex celebrity that was very unique. And I don't really see – I don't think we're going to see the likes of someone that was able to, to appeal to so many people and to do it in a way that it's – once again, think about it. Like, you know, she didn't sing and she didn't dance. Why did we like her so much? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, she was committed to some things, but she was just one of those – she was such a big personality that was just always in front of us. She was on television. Remember when she came to Chicago?
Oh, yeah, that was a major
– I mean, my gosh, the city – the city shut down. There was a – remember there
–
Yeah, remember there was one guy that asked her to dance?
Yeah.
Some lawyer, and he became like a celebrity for 2 or 3 days because this guy just, she was at some gala, and this guy had the guts to walk up to her and say, "Can I have this dance?" And she said, "Yes." but as I said, I think September 6th would be the anniversary of her actual funeral, which was, again, a very, moving experience to see her two young kids walking behind the casket. And then, as I said, Elton John's performance, and then even her brother, if you remember, her brother's eulogy was...
Oh, yeah, very moving.
Very moving and very controversial because he did not pull any punches, and
he called everybody out.
Yeah, he had some things to say about the Royals in that room.
Right.
And I remember watching that going, wow, that takes guts to say that when the Queen of England is sitting right in front of you. And,
hey, lady, you're part of this.
Yeah, so... very interesting moment in pop culture. That I said one of the pivotal points, and a turning point, because in many ways, Lady Di was living a reality show. If you think about it,
mm-hmm,
and
sure.
Now and then, 5-6 years later, reality TV took over. So once again, you have to look back at her life as well as the legacy that she left as a pop culture icon. And I don't think there's going to be many people that will be able to match the kind of impact she had for people. But, 20 years ago today, that is, it was a fast 20 years, I'll tell you that. So, why don't we take a quick break here? Mick Kaler's with us. We're going to take a little sneak preview here as to what Bruce Springsteen is going to be opening on Broadway next month. And I've got a little inside scoop as to what this show is really going to be about. So, you might want to take a listen to that. Elton Jim filling in for David Plyer here. It's about 4:19, and we'll be back right after this. No switching.
They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway.
On Broadway.
They say there's always magic in the air.
Jim Toronto filling in for Dave Plyer this morning. We're talking pop culture with Mick Kaler here. So, Mick, I don't know about you. I mean, we're both big Springsteen fans. I've seen Bruce about 60 times in concert. I might be Elton Jim, but I'm also a Bruce Springsteen disciple. And so right now, I would have to say one of the biggest tickets and hottest tickets in Broadway history, not just of this season, but of Broadway history, went on sale this week. And I think they went on sale in 2 seconds. They went on sale and were sold in 2 seconds. for Bruce Springsteen's upcoming stand that starts in October, now runs through February at the Walter Kerr Theater. Only 900 seats in there, and so obviously these tickets are at a huge premium. They sold out in 2 seconds, and I heard stories that on StubHub, on some secondary markets, the tickets were going between $6,000 and $7,500 per ticket.
Yeah. Move over Hello Dolly and move over Hamilton, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is, I don't think there's ever been a rock star of Bruce Springsteen's magnitude that has, you know, been doing a show, and we still don't know. I mean, we have been told of what it will be. Now, what's interesting about this this ticket situation, that to get tickets, because there's such a demand, and the tickets range in price from $850 for one ticket to $75, to try to stop scalping, brokering of tickets, they've come up with this thing called a verified fan, because Bruce is one of the most brokered artists around, and people have made livings off of just selling his tickets on the secondary market. I don't know if this is going to work or not. They're trying. You know, I if you have an account on Ticketmaster, you apply, and then they apparently do research on you. I don't know what that means, which is kind of scary. And then they were supposed to send you a special code, and if you got the code, that didn't mean you got tickets. That just meant that you were able to get into the website. And if there were any tickets left, you could possibly buy them.
You were approved. Several hurdles to jump through.
Yeah, this was hard. I mean, this was – so, of course, I get this email the night before the tickets go on sale that say I'm on standby. So that's sort of like, you know, you're trying to get into your favorite your college, and you're on the waiting list.
Yeah.
And from what I understand is almost everybody in the world got a standby notification.
Yeah, you better have a safety school plan.
So now here's the thing that I don't like. So they added some shows. The show was supposed to go until December, and they added some shows through January into early February. So I'm like, oh, great, another chance, even though I'm sure I will not get chosen. But at least there's an opportunity. But here's the thing that I don't like. They opened up the registration again.
Okay.
So if you already registered, you have to re-register for that chance for these codes. But then they said if you haven't registered, you have 2 days to register. Well, you shouldn't open up the pool again.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you've added shows, but the demand for shows is still there. And now you're just, you know, it's like all of a sudden you buy a lottery ticket and then they go, oh, by the way, we're gonna add four more numbers. So now that lessens your odds. So now my odds are lessened, even though they added more shows. They opened it up for more people to get into the pool again. So now I have a less chance again.
Let's put it this way, pal. Unless you got 10 grand to spend on a ticket.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally not going. I know that. But I'm just, in my mind, I'm still thinking that I might be able to get a chance. But I'm sure I'll get the same standby email on Wednesday. The tickets go on sale Thursday for these shows in January and February. But so everybody's wondering, so what is this going to be? And the dribbles and that have come out is that it's going to be a one-man show. He's going to have a guitar. He's going to have a piano. He's going to read from his book. He's going to tell some stories. And it's going to be this kind of two-hour little, you know, Bruce Springsteen alone kind of telling his story. But that's what they would have you think.
Right. Well, maybe sitting in a big easy chair in front of a fireplace.
Yeah. See, I don't really believe that. But here's, and Mick said to me, you know, wouldn't it be interesting? You know, we should maybe do some parody songs. You know, of Bruce doing, you know, about Bruce being on Broadway. And you were a great inspiration to me because I said, you know, this what might even be more fun is, what is this show really going to be like? So this is what I picture, a Bruce Springsteen, you know, concert.
Right.
On Broadway being. So I think he's going to come out, and as we know, Bruce always tells stories and then leads into songs, right?
Yeah.
So this is the way I picture what really Bruce on Broadway is going to be, because first it was Barrymore and Brando and now Bruce.
Sure.
So this is what I picture. So out in Jersey, there was this theater. And there was this phantom, and he was in the theater, and
no one ever saw him. You know what I mean? And Clarence saw him, and Mighty Mac saw him, and Miami Steve saw him, but no one else saw him except the E Street Band. And we would go to this theater, and we would just hear this music being played, but we never knew where it was from, and we'd be at a sound check. And while we were playing this song in Jersey, we'd hear this other music, and we didn't know where it was from. And then someone said, well, you know, that's the Phantom. And I was like, wow. And then I thought, if that's the Phantom, then nighttime sharpens, heightens each sensation. Darkness stirs and wakes imagination. Silently the senses abandon their fences. Listen to the music of the night.
I think that's what Bruce is going to do. I don't think he's going to sit there and do... I think he's going to sing his version of Broadway tunes. I think Bruce wants to be like the Ethel Merman of the rock world.
Here's what I'm thinking. Hello, Rosalita. Well, hello.
It's so nice to have you back where you belong. Or how about this? Dear God, you have made many, many poor people. And I realize, of course, that it's no shame to be poor. But it's no great honor either. So, would have been so terrible, Clarence, if I had a small fortune, if I was a rich man. Ha-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dee-da-dum.
Can't you see that?
I'm picturing that.
That's what I think. It's not going to be Bruce Springsteen with an acoustic guitar playing Born to Run.
No, we don't need that.
Or Darkness on the Edge of Town or Rosalita. I think it's going to be Bruce Springsteen going, Old Man River, that old man river, it just keeps rolling along.
Or maybe he can do... He can do some more dramatic interpretations. He can do A Pink Cadillac Called Desire.
So that's going to be the real Bruce on Broadway. Forget about all this stuff about him doing. I think he's going to come out and do Broadway tunes.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, now, are we going to see him in the Cats makeup?
Yeah.
Memory! All alone in the moonlight! The sun will come out. Don't cry for me, Jersey.
Mick, thank you so much for joining us in the Pop Culture Club.
My pleasure, pal. We'll talk soon.
We will talk soon. It is 4:32. I'm Elton Jim filling in for David Plyer. Hey, Big Joe Romano, should I just go to news or I take a break here? Oh, go to news. Hey, Roger Badish, how are you doing at 4:30?
I'm doing real good.
Well, let's prove it to me and do the news.
Okay, here we go.
Sam Cooke. Well, I'm happy to have Paul Schwann's son, Dave, on with me.
He threw me there for a minute. That's actually my middle name, though, so I'll answer to that, too. Yeah.
So now, this is the first time I've ever done this with you.
I know.
Apparently, you do. I got an email from somebody that said, are you going to work with Schwanny when you fill in for Dave Plyer? And I wrote back on Facebook. I said, "Well, I don't think Schwanny's going to get up that early. He works with Dean."
No, I start this time.
So I didn't know that you started at 4:30 or 5 o'clock would be your first newscast.
That's right. That is correct.
I did not know that.
And so
that is, so in other words, so what Dave does is he does a newscast, but he doesn't do it until 5. So Roger is a newsman, and he does it at 4:30. And then there's Dave Schwann, and he does a newscast, and he does it at 5. That is wild.
You've got the order.
That is wild stuff.
So apparently, so I said, you know, so this guy writes back, and he says, no, he said, you know, Schwanee does a segment.
Was this a listener?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he goes, Schwanee does a segment with Dave about this week in history.
Yes.
This week in history.
Right. Right.
So I said, well, I'd certainly be happy to do that. I love working with Schwanee, and this. So this is a great day. I love both Roger and Schwanee. So to be able to work with both of you within one show is monumental.
Are you saving the air check?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I think Bruce Dumont from the Museum of Broadcasting will want this.
He's going to enshrine
it. He's already asked for this, so we're going to be taping this and sending it over.
It will be in a listening booth.
Yes, as soon as we're finished.
As soon as you walk into the museum.
Yeah, I know. So, like I said, to work with a Roger Badish and then have a Dave Schwann chaser.
Wow.
Holy smokes.
I mean, 7 recorders going.
Yeah. I mean, we are definitely going to grab. We don't want any
Even
of this.
Even the reel-to-reel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got reel-to-reels, 8-tracks, DATs.
DAT. Good luck in finding one of those.
I know. DAT. You name it. We are taping it just to make sure. Thank you, Joe. That's Joe Romano, the producer. Thank you for.
Morning,
for,
Joe.
For.
That's the name of a show, isn't it?
Morning, Joe.
Morning. Morning, Joe. Yeah, hi, Mika.
Good morning. I'm on my second cup of Joe here.
I never drink coffee.
You don't drink coffee?
Never drink coffee. Never have.
That's crazy.
Never have. I don't.
And
like
you could do an overnight show and not drink coffee.
No, I never liked the taste. I never liked the taste.
Really?
Never liked the taste of coffee.
And wow.
I don't know from Venti's and Menti's and Clenty's. I don't know. The only thing I've ever bought at Starbucks is a muffin.
How about tea?
I'm not a big warm beverage guy in general.
Yeah.
You know,
coffee tea isn't going to work for you.
No, I mean, I guess maybe it was some kind of a generational thing where when I was growing up, you know, coffee was the beverage of an adult.
Oh, yeah.
And so the adults.
You can't have any.
Yeah, right. You didn't. Yeah, that was a big thing. You couldn't even have it. They didn't even want you to have it.
Right, right.
Initially.
You're not old enough to.
Yeah, there was like an. You're exactly right. There was like an age. There was some weird age barrier.
I didn't start drinking until I.
What, you mean alcohol? Okay, step 9. Step 9, Dave, is make amends.
Okay.
And just, Dave, can I just say, one day at a time, pal. One day at a
time. Coffee. I was in high school when I started.
Hello. My name is Dave Schwann. Hello, Dave. And I'm an alcoholic. Hello, Dave.
Don't get personal.
No, so I you am, said, when did you start to smoke? I mean, smoke.
Drink coffee.
Drink coffee.
I was in high school.
Really?
You know, yeah.
And you had to sneak it, probably.
No, because when I would have the coffee, I wasn't at home. I was at school. I worked in the school auditorium, and there was a area there where there was a little room off to the back where coffee was made for custodians and people that worked in the building. And they, you know, it was a great big, you know, hold maybe 40 cups of coffee. It was a huge thing. And, you know, we'd go in there and get coffee and.
When do you think?
Stuff.
Well, here's an interesting thing here, Dave. So apparently, this segment is called "This Week in History," right?
Yeah, we're supposedly. Talking history here.
Well, here's
now.
What I'm questioning.
High school.
So let's see if we can massage this. I have a history story that did happen this week that we could discuss.
Go right ahead.
But let me work some radio magic here, and massage this. Could it be possibly, Dave, that? Maybe your first cup of coffee was maybe, you said what, you were how old?
Oh, 17.
17, I'm going to say you're what, 50?
No, I just turned 61.
Oh, I was trying to be nice to you.
Thank you, yeah. You were.
Boy, You're only 61?
I'm only 61.
Wow.
Thank you. Only 61.
That coffee is wreaking havoc on your face, Dave. Okay, so you said you were 17, so let's say that was, maybe 42 years ago.
So, around there, yeah.
So mm-hmm. let's say 44 years ago,
mm-hmm.
to be exact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's pretend that on September 3rd,
1973 or so.
Yeah. You had your first cup of coffee.
This date in history.
This week in history. Could you play the stinger again there, Joey? All right.
Don't know much about history.
44 years ago today, Dave Schwann, I have some news for you. What happened?
I had my first cup of coffee.
Really? How cool is that? 44 years ago today, what are the odds that we would be on the air on the day 44 years ago? So tell us, Dave, what were the circumstances that revolved around you having your first cup of coffee when you were 17?
Oh, probably either early in the morning or late at night. I was in high school, and as I said, we had a nice auditorium, which is still there at the high school, and was working in the auditorium and thought, oh, everybody's having a cup of coffee.
Now,
I'm going to have a cup of
coffee. Is Dave Schwann a black
yes.
fan or yeah. a sugar
no,
or
just,
coffee?
Just straight. No cream.
Look at
sugar.
You. That yeah. You know what? I'm not a coffee drinker. Don't like it. But I get. But what I like about you is you're drinking coffee.
Oh,
if,
yeah.
If you have any kind of a coffee beverage with a Chino at the end of it, that's not coffee.
Can I tell you a story?
So you don't drink coffee if you drink anything with a Chino at the end of it.
Can I tell you a story? You prompted a story that popped into my head here that goes right along with what you've been saying here.
Yeah.
I was in line at a coffee place. Let's see. Seattle's Best is not around anymore. Caribou Coffee isn't around. It's all Peak's Coffee now. But I was in line in one of those places, and there was someone in front of me that wanted this and that, and boom, 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 going on with a cup of coffee.
Yeah, a spray of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were very busy in there, and the poor guy behind the counter was a really great young guy. And
you mean the barista?
The barista. I could have been a barista instead of a broadcaster, but the poor guy.
I think you chose the right person. You don't have enough tattoos.
The poor guy, you know, did his best, you know, brought the person the coffee. And then when I came up to the counter, he had this rather frightened look on his face.
Like, what is this guy going to ask
what's
for?
What's he going to say? And I said, it loud enough for the person that ordered all of the ingredients in the other coffee to hear. I said, I just want a plain cup of coffee. And the man bowed to me. He was like, thank you. I'm so grateful.
No, good for you. I mean,
I just want a plain cup of coffee.
If you have,
and I'm out of here.
Yeah, if you have coffee, as I said, and any kind of drink with a Chino, that's not coffee. And if you have sugar or cream, especially cream, you're not drinking coffee. You're hiding you're masking the taste.
There's a lot of coffee places out there. Have you seen these?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's
a million
like a wine tasting.
Well, because, I mean, once Starbucks.
No, some of the independent places that
oh,
are
yeah.
around. You know,
well, yeah.
They make this type of coffee and that. I don't know if they, you know, do the cream or sugar
yeah.
because of they want the actual true flavor.
Well, that's what they should. If you're a coffee connoisseur, that's what you should have. You should have coffee straight. And then if there are some craft coffees, if you will, which I'm sure is on the way, then with hibiscus,
you don't buy coffee, you know, in the store.
No, I don't.
But look at all the different flavored ground and whole bean coffees you can
buy. If you have them, you should drink them straight. You should not augment them with any kind of sweetener or cream. That's what I say, even though I'm not a coffee drinker. But if you're going to drink coffee, you got to drink it straight. So I applaud you for drinking it straight. Now, I don't know on a regular basis if the previous Dave Schwann, Dave Plyer, This Week in History segments have been as exciting and interesting as this one.
We've never been this in-depth.
Yeah, I mean, this one, to me, I mean, we're sending this right to the museum because, I mean, I was going to talk about, did you know, just as a quickie, just to give you a quick little thing, did you know that in 1984, not on this date, but on this week in 1984, Mike Witkowski of Illinois became the first $40 million lottery winner.
I remember covering that.
And that was, at that time, the biggest.
$7 million or so?
40. 40
was
million.
It 40 million?
40 okay. million. And he split it up between him and his two brother, or his brother and his sister. So he actually only got 10. He was a nice guy. He split it up four ways. But at that time, 40 million.
That's
was,
right.
Was the biggest.
Mike Witkowski.
Mike Witkowski, yes. Northwest Side guy. I think he was a printer.
He was a printer.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he won the $40 million. That was the biggest lotto prize in the nation at that time.
At that time,
and
yeah.
now, just think about it. 2 weeks ago, some woman won $700 million. I mean, that's, look at how, look at within, you know what, 1984. So we're talking about what, 37 years, you know, 34, 33 years. Look at how the lottery numbers have changed.
Well, it's a lot of that's due,
more than,
you know, to Powerball. And,
oh yeah,
you know,
but
multiple
I'm just saying,
states getting into this.
People don't even
jackpot.
Play the lottery for $40 million anymore.
That's pocket change.
Yeah, when it's 40, they don't even play. And that you know, back in 1984, that was number one. So we could have talked about that story. But
well,
I
we
think,
already did.
But I think that Dave Schwann's
first
cup of
coffee is more important.
From 19, what year did we say?
I'd say 73.
1973, This Week in History, Dave Schwann, a young 17-year-old trying to fit in, an awkward 17-year-old looking to be like
looking
the adults.
Looking to be cool.
Looking to be cool. He didn't want to try to hit a ball. He didn't want to try to throw a football. He wanted to drink a cup of coffee. That was how he was going to get into the in crowd.
And then 2 years later, I'm in college doing morning radio, and there was coffee all over the place.
And then he started spitting it out. But it all started in what year did we think? 1973.
Or so, yeah. Well, have
on
you
September 2nd,
September 3rd, 1973. Well, it was right. We were just going back to school, right?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Working in the
there
school auditorium. Boy, those were the days, man. Yeah. I had so much fun. But have you seen the stories, Elton, about what coffee is can do for you? You know, it lowers risk of diabetes.
That's what I heard.
High blood pressure, maybe that's a different story.
Yeah, that might. Yeah, I think it might raise that.
Then you may want to watch your coffee intake. But there are benefits, positive benefits of coffee.
Well, not just physically, but for you socially.
Well, that's right.
And look at
after
him.
My first cup of coffee.
What a pro!
Right
He's
in.
Swallowing coffee on the air. What a pro! I don't know how Dave Plyer's ever going to top this Week in History segment after the Dave Schwann first cup
I'm
of coffee.
I'm working with him tomorrow. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, good luck. You'll never top it. It's 4:51. I'm Elton Jim filling in for Dave Plyer. We'll be back after this. No switching. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer here. The show is just about coming to an end. I want to thank having fun with Roger Badish tonight, as well as little Dave Schwann here. And please, Dave. Say hi to Dina Reno for me.
I will. And by the way, next time we work together, mm-hmm. I'm going to try my best to tally up the number of cups of coffee I've had between September 3rd, 1973, and now. So we'll just put it up to now. You know,
I'm sure that listeners will be waiting for that segment with bated breath.
We talked about it for 25 minutes.
As I said, I'm Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. I had a great time. Hopefully you did too. And hopefully we'll talk again soon. It is 5 o'clock, and this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN.